I'm Abel Ferrara. The only reason I'm here is because I'm getting $5,000.
I wonder if I can do an entire intro as the Pornhub woman.
Yeah, can you?
I don't know. Let's see. Let's see if I can do it. I feel like you could probably just find that voice online somehow.
You probably
and have it
can.
Like just talk. Okay. There's like another one I saw the other day. They were like, there's an entire town of people looking to fuck.
That's stressful.
Yeah.
Couldn't they all just fuck each other?
Yeah.
They all want to fuck each other. But then it's weird because then it just like segues into fuck your stepmother, fuck your stepsister.
It's like, why would you start there?
I know if you're in a town where everybody wants to fuck, I wouldn't be like, well, no, I can finally fuck my stepsister.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess some people would because they would be like, finally, I have an excuse.
Excuse, yeah.
Should do like an invasion of the body snatchers where an entire town is just taken over by people who want to
fuck. So horny. Yeah.
Want to masturbate but don't have a podcast?
That's good.
Welcome back to Rotten Rewind, a podcast that looks back at the movies critics did not want to bust a nut in. If a film fails to score above the 60% threshold, we get to fuck it right here on this podcast. I'm Max Rue.
Yeah, I can't do that.
It's voice. Okay.
I'm Courtney Peronto.
Hi, Courtney Peronto.
Oh my God.
Pick which family member you want to fuck right now on this podcast.
Thank God. I'm an only child.
That's going to be our new Patreon prize. Pick which Patreon member you want to fuck. God. Yeah, you're Courtney Peronto. I'm Max Rue.
Yeah.
We have a familiar third with us. We have Olivia Wilkie here with us.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks.
Welcome back.
Yeah, thank you for coming back. We were looking for some demon lover stands, and that's you.
That's me. Love it. It's my favorite Olivier.
Wow.
I still haven't seen a lot of his movies, I realized. Not a lot, but like a good amount that I want to see. We are in week two of Vulgar Vibes, and we're just talking about vibe movies this month.
These are horny vibe movies. They go really well together.
They also have, I think, a lot more plot than some of the other movies, but still vibes. Still,
they do, especially.
You can choose to ignore plot and vibe. You can do that if you wanted to.
I was pretty into the plot of New Rose Hotel.
Yeah, I guess it's a little easier to follow. Demon Lovers is, it's a little lost in the weeds. Probably. Not in a bad way, but in a way where I was like, oh, I need to maybe figure out what's going on.
Was this your first time watching it?
It was
my first time watching both.
Which I guess if you're listening, you're probably wondering, what is Demon Lover? What is New Rose Hotel? Those are the movies we're talking about today. We're talking about two directors we've never talked about. One who has a few rotten movies that we definitely will be visiting in the future. And the other is, I think a rarely rotten filmmaker. We're talking about Abel Ferrara. Just one of the best. Just one of the fucking coolest.
Still alive, right?
Still alive.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he's still alive. He's
still making movies.
Oh, yeah. He's more prolific than ever. Yeah. He's making like a movie a year, I feel like, almost at this point.
That's good. Yeah. I haven't seen enough of his work. I've really only seen like Bad Lieutenant, King of New York, and this, I think.
I think I've seen most of them, but there's definitely still a few I have not seen. And he has his new movie this year with Shia LaBeouf. Padre Pio. He said, I'll fucking work with Shia. I don't give a fuck. What do you do? Yeah.
There's no real rules anymore.
Yeah, pick which celebrity you want to uncancel. We're talking about Abel Ferrara, just a filmmaker that I think you just immediately comes to mind when you think of Dirtbag New York. And then we're going to be talking about a French filmmaker who is, I think, a lot more versatile than people realize. I think that he can really switch gears and genres pretty easily.
Yeah, this movie shocked me after knowing, like, seeing the movies that I've seen of his.
Yeah, Olivier Assayas. How do you say, is it Assayas?
I think so.
I've heard people say Assayas. I don't know.
In America, you're Oliver ass. Sorry.
He's married to what's her name for a long time.
Who?
Maggie Chung?
Maggie Chung. Because she's like fluent in like English, Cantonese, and French. But yeah, they were together for a really long time. Or, Hollywood a long time.
Yeah. I've never seen Clean.
I've never seen Clean either.
The good Nick Nolte performance?
Goddamn wife's a fucking drunk.
Okay, actually, they were only married for like 4 years.
Can't stop doing heroin.
But I think that when I was coming to know both of them, they were married. So I guess it's just like really stuck in my head.
Yeah, I have not seen really any of his really, really early movies. I still haven't seen Cold Water, which I need to.
I've never really seen
Cold Water. Have you seen Cold Water, Olivia?
I haven't.
I've heard it's great. I fucking own it. I just haven't watched it. I also need to rewatch Irma Vep because I wasn't.
I like
crazy.
Irma Vep.
I wasn't crazy.
It's great.
But everybody loves
it. I don't know how I feel about this new TV show.
I haven't watched it. I watched the pilot and I was kind of into it, but I didn't watch it anymore.
Yeah, I watched the pilot and I was like, I could see this being good, but I don't know if I have the patience to like sit with it. And then honestly, I think my favorite of his is Summer Hours.
I've never seen Summer Hours.
It's like fun. It's really fun.
I mean, Carlos is amazing.
See, I haven't seen that. He works a lot.
Yeah. He does. Yeah. There's so much.
I would recommend Carlos. That's a fucking really good one. And you can watch it like a series because he shot it like a series. And then I've seen Clouds of Sils Maria and Personal Shopper. Personal Shopper is another one I guess I should revisit because I don't love Personal Shopper either. But
it's not my thing either. It's really interesting, but it's just not my thing.
I was really confused. I did see it like pretty hungover, but I don't know. I was just like, I'm just not on this movie's wavelength in the way that I think a lot of people are. But and Kristen Stewart's great in it. She's great in Clouds of Sils Maria too. I want to see Boarding Gate. That's the one I want to watch.
I want to watch Boarding Gate too. That's also what's her name, right?
That. Yeah, it's Aja Argento. And Michael Madsen.
Whoa.
Power couple. That's his other rotten movie, Boarding Gate. We can cover Boarding Gate. I'm down. Yeah. I mean, the poster of the movie is Aja Argento in bra and underwear and high heels with a gun.
Yeah,
say no more. But yeah, we're talking about Demon Lover today. For Abel, we're talking about New Res Hotel, a movie that is one of his most, if not his worst received movie outside of The Blackout, I think.
I don't understand why, really.
I mean, it's you know, as we'll talk about, it's gotten a little bit of a resurgence. But,
okay, yeah.
It's also based on a William Gibson short story, which I've never read. I've never read any William Gibson.
I've read the one that Blade Runner is based on.
Have you read any William Gibson, Olivia?
I haven't.
Well, we've already covered one William Gibson movie from the 90s on here, a little movie called Johnny Mnemonic.
Yeah. I don't know. He kind of writes like nerdy shit. It's like,
I'm going to read this shit.
I thought,
this guy does not fuck.
He kind of writes nerdy shit. If anything, I was like, oh, this is like better than I would assume like a William Gibson project.
I guess it's also funny just to think of Abel Ferrara adapting William Gibson. Like I just can't really think of two more polar opposite entities coming together. But yeah, let's start in 1998 with New Res Hotel.
From the producer of Wall Street and The Crow.
Are you in contact with the subject?
We're prepared to deliver Hiroshi Mori.
And the director of Bad Lieutenant and King of New York.
The price, $100 million.
Comes William Gibson's cyberpunk fantasy.
This is a defection, not a kidnapping.
To business.
Corporations are at war for tomorrow's technology.
He's mutating a virus. Could cure the common cold. You know how many billions that's worth?
In the shadows, two men plot.
Our friend has a taste for dark-haired beauties. I know what the guy likes.
To get rich by it.
Beautiful temptress seduces wild and crazy egghead scientist to drop his humdrum life.
But one woman.
You're saying I get paid $1 million?
How do you know I'll do this?
Holds the key.
You know how to make believe? Make a man fall in love with you. Get her ready. Teach her. Just watch me.
What do you do?
I steal people.
There's some kind of power struggle. I smell money, much more money.
They're gonna kill you, you know that?
Academy Award winner Christopher Walken, Academy Award nominee Willem Dafoe, and Aja Argento. When love is a weapon.
We're no closer to pulling this off than the first time you thought of it.
Trust can be fatal.
What happened to the girl?
The girl has vanished.
The money's gone. They deny we had an account.
They're gonna come after us, you know that.
I've been hunted my whole life. It's all I know.
I'll think about it.
Good. Time's up.
Do it. I forever wish you had.
New Rose Hotel.
So this is a pre-XXX.
Oh, Aja Argento. Yeah, I was like, what are you getting at?
No, it's like
that's how we should talk about every movie. This is pre-XXX and post-XXX.
Well, okay, because when
that's
I was watching
BC
it,
and AD.
Well, because when I was watching it, I was like trying to remember the first time I was aware of her. And it was definitely when she got super famous off of XXX and was like on the cover of Rolling Stone and stuff like that. But
yeah, I guess that would probably be the first time a lot of American audiences, I'm assuming. Because
how old was she when she was in this?
Looks like she was 22 when they shot it.
Okay.
Wait, who is she dating now? Sorry, I thought there was a photo of her that came up with Nick Lachey, and I was like, what the fuck?
No, Nick Lachey is married to that one lady.
I know. Netflix keeps him in like a little closet, and they just like release him every time they have a new reality show. Like, all right. Have you ever watched any of those shows that he hosts?
No, but yeah, I like your impersonation of a lot of them.
I kind of admire him because it looks like he really has to go to a really dark place whenever he's like hosting them, whenever he has to listen to these contestants talk. You can just see in his eyes that he goes somewhere else. And is like, I'm in hell. I can't leave this place. But yeah, New Rose Hotel, based on a William Gibson short story, which none of us have read because we're not nerds. But we watched the version of it for people who do fuck.
Yeah.
The Ferrara version, scored by Schooly D. Very cool score, actually.
I was going to say, I really...
Apparently he fired him at some point, but I was like, this score is dope. The whole movie has like a late 90s trip hop take on William Gibson, which I'm into. Both movies today are kind of about corporate espionage done in very art house techno thriller ways, but this one has Fox and X, played by Christopher Walken and Willem Dafoe. They are corporate extraction specialists, like headhunters, and they're kind of kidnappers too. They're basically helping this one competitor take down another competitor, and in order to do so, they hire Sandy, played by Asia Argento, who's like a call girl.
To fucking distract him.
Yeah.
It's basically like there she's all that in her, kind of. Or like, or not she's all that. What's the one
she's all that
in.
What's the one where it's like,
no. What's the one where it's like, I bet you won't date this nerd for, you know what I mean? It's sort of as...
We bet you won't last 20 seconds fucking this nerd.
It's just like, yeah, hot girl, go throw this guy off.
I guess that's a reverse she's all that.
Yeah, it's a reverse sheet. Oh, I guess that's sort of like 10 Things I Hate About You. Date this nerd for a minute. I was just like,
that's exactly what New Rose Hotel is. Abel's 10 Things I Hate About You. Yeah, they hire her because they're just like, we need your pussy. And she's like, okay. And then Willem Dafoe's like, I really like your pussy though. So I maybe don't.
Well, yeah, Willem Dafoe is already at first paying her to fuck, but then it seems like they just hobby fuck.
They fall in love.
Yeah, that's hobby fucking.
Yeah, there you go, hobby fucking. But she's kind of a femme fatale, and she betray him.
She dub betray him.
She betray.
I really like when they're hiring her, how like, I like the scene where Christopher Walken is like judging her outfits. That is something that more movies need, is Christopher Walken being like, I like this. This is kind of trashy. And he's like, wait. I mean, obviously you're beautiful, but like this Japanese guy's rich. Like you're going to have to be the best, you know? I do feel like it's kind of like
he's
a
not
teen
wrong.
Movie setup. Yeah.
It is with Christopher Walken and with a cane.
Yeah.
Christopher Walken uses his cane a lot throughout the movie to be his dick as well, which is great. He oftentimes just slides his cane between his legs.
And also, I do want to... Yeah, I do want to bring up too that like the syndicate of hookers that they like pick from and fuck, they're all really good at singing sort of like PJ Harvey-esque songs.
They are.
They're all good singers. I was just like, I couldn't work here.
That's another like teen movie tie-in, actually. Like how everybody's like a professional dancer at these high schools. Like everyone is an untapped talent. For singing.
Yeah, this brothel just has a ton of...
I really like looking at New Rose Hotel as a teen movie now. I think that's the way I'd like to view it.
I mean, the credits are really cool. And then the opening
scene... The credits
scene
are
amazing. I was like, more things should look like this. They're really fun. They're just at this like bordello / like club where these women are like kind of making out with each other with an audience, but then also sort of singing.
It's a great club, like a teen show
that's like has like, you know, like the Peach Pit or the Bronze. I was like, oh,
that's
okay.
Where they go.
I was bummed that we didn't get to like spend more time there
at the karaoke sex club.
Yeah
We've never talked about Abel Ferrara on this podcast. It's been a long time coming. I know we've always wanted to. He has a good amount of movies that we can discuss. I'm sure Padre Pio will be one of them. I'm sure we can talk about Shia LaBeouf's Catholicism makeover. That's his teen movie. They made him over with Catholicism. The only way you're going to win the public back is if you become Catholic. I found fucking God.
I do think that he's one that like people want back. So I think eventually he'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, I've gone on the record a lot saying I'm a big Shia LaBeouf fan, that I wish he didn't do what he did.
Yeah.
I really liked his performance in Nymphomaniac. Hate the movie. And I love his performance in American Honey. I thought
he's great in American Honey.
He's a talented actor. He's a piece of shit, but he's a talented actor.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think he's underrated a little bit. Say.
Him and Ferrara feel like a natural fit. I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
How do you guys feel about Abel Ferrara?
I mean, I haven't seen that much, but what I've seen, I like. It's bombastic and edgy, but in kind of like a quaint way.
I love Abel. I mean, I think you kind of got to get on board with, like, he's very, very prominently like male gazy, but I don't think that's a bad thing. I think he photographs women in a way that's like, he loves how they look, so he focuses on their looks a lot.
He's very horny. Yeah,
he's extremely horny. Yeah, extremely horny director, which I think is, you know, a strong suit for him. I think it gives him a little bit of an edge.
It works. Yeah. Because it doesn't ever feel like predatory. It just feels like, it just feels so just like, I'm just a New Yorker who loves ass. And like, whenever he talks about actresses who didn't get the part in his movie, he's like, she's hot, but I couldn't give it to her. He has to like compliment them. He's like, she's fucking gorgeous, right? He's like, I wanted to give her the part, but... I have never seen his first movie, Nine Lives of a Wet Pussy.
That's true. You're not just riffing.
No, that's his.
No, that's real. Yeah.
It's like he made an erotic movie for his first film. It's on Mubi, apparently. I have seen The Driller Killer. Miss 45 is great. What else we have? Fierce City is fun. Good little trashy thriller. I've never seen China Girl.
I haven't either.
Yeah, I think curious you guys have seen it much more than me.
Yeah, and then he becomes more prominent with like King of New York and Bad Lieutenant. Those are like his most known. I actually really fuck with his Body Snatchers remake.
I'm looking at the poster for it now and it looks cool.
Haven't seen it.
It's his only big studio movie. And he, of course, had a horrible experience.
Mm-hmm.
Unsurprisingly. I think it's kind of cool. Like, it's definitely like butchered, but it's got some pretty wild shit in it. Dangerous Game is another one I think we were going to cover that I'm sure we will in the future with Madonna and Harvey Keitel. Mm-hmm. The Addiction. And then, we get The Funeral with Christopher Walken and Vincent Gallo, who we talked about last week. That's the one where Vincent Gallo said Abel Ferrara was smoking crack and pickpocketed him on set. Which is
fucking crazy.
That sounds real.
I know. That's what we were saying. I was like, I totally believe that he did that to me. What the fuck? A movie is that I really like that I think has a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
What?
Is The Blackout with Matthew Modine and Dennis Hopper.
A zero?
Haven't seen it.
It's good.
Wow.
I want to see Our Xmas with Ice-T and Drea Di Matteo. That sounds...
I want to see that so badly. It was on Crackle for like the longest time, but I never got around to it.
I know. I can't find it now. He did a movie about Mary Magdalene that I can't find either. That sounds really weird.
I know what you're talking about too, and I can't find it either.
Yeah, Juliette Binoche. And Matthew Modine as Jesus. Forrest Whitaker as someone named Ted. That's okay. I'm dead. And then he does Go-Go Tales, which is great. Go-Go Tales and New Rose Hotel feel kind of like in the same.
Maybe I should watch.
Yeah, Go-Go Tales is great. And then he makes some documentaries. He does 444 Last Day on Earth with Willem Dafoe.
Oh God, I hate that movie so much.
I do too. I don't get the love for 444.
So people like that one?
I don't get it.
People love that movie. People I don't love hate it. But I don't like it. I don't get it.
It seems like he works with like the same several people over and over again. So he must be
He has muses.
He loves Willem. I love his Pasolini movie. I think it's really good.
Still haven't seen it.
It's really good. And then Tommaso with Willem Dafoe and Siberia with Willem Dafoe. Last year he did Zeros and Ones with Ethan Hawke.
Great movie.
Yeah. Also Rotten. We can talk about Zeros and Ones.
Oh, wow.
And Padre Pio is his latest. So, he's obviously one of the most prominent underground filmmakers of his era that became pretty prominent at a certain point and then stopped getting American financing in the late 90s around this time. Do you know who was hired to direct this movie?
Is it guessable? Soderbergh.
No.
I don't know.
Late 80s, early 90s action director. Mm. One of your favorite movies.
One of my favorite movies?
Yeah.
John Woo? I don't know.
No.
Yeah. Who?
Catherine Bigelow.
Oh, duh.
Oh,
I can see that. Actually, because I do think that the Karaoke Bordello is sort of like the Juliette Lewis.
Strange Days.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, So she got hired. She started working on it, I think, in the late 80s, started going into the mid-90s working on it, and then did Strange Days instead, which makes sense. I found an interview with Abel Ferrara talking about it. Really fascinating interview from IndieWire in 1998. I didn't even know IndieWire was around in 1998. They interviewed him while he's partying in the Hamptons with Willem Dafoe and Leonardo DiCaprio, and they're all jamming together, which is fascinating to think about.
What's DiCaprio's instrument? Okay, thank you.
I think guitar or bass.
I see him as a bassist.
Yeah, I think it might be bass. So then I guess they asked him about it. And he said they started off by buying the short story for Kathy Bigelow. She took Gibson and demoralized him. When she when she got through with this guy, he didn't even know his own name. She killed him. When I talked to Gibson, I said, you want to help? He said, if you need me, you're in bad shape. She had him thinking he couldn't write a script, that he was useless. Believe me, I don't know how this guy even survived that. She wanted her way. You should read the script he wrote for this. If it wasn't called Nero's Hotel, you wouldn't know what the hell it was. They got rid of him. They didn't know him. They didn't want him around anymore. So I guess they were going to do this with Catherine Bigelow and Arnold Schwarzenegger in the Christopher Walken part, which kind of want to see the alternate universe where Abel Ferrara has to direct Arnold.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
With a cane.
It's like, I don't think he would have a cane.
No, but it would be tight.
Yeah.
Arnold using his cane as a cock would be like...
Same other casting?
No. This was just like, that was the main thing, was that like, it was going to be a big budget, like sci-fi.
Okay.
You know, thriller.
Interesting.
It's not that sci-fi at all.
Well, I think he strips a lot of it down. Like, I think he's very loyal to like the skeleton of the story, but then he strips it down because they asked him about like all, they were like, what was the most challenging part? It must have been all the like cyber lingo and shit like that. And he was like, fuck that. I took all of it out. He's like, I don't give a fuck about that shit.
I think that's why I like it. When the credits were like based on a story by William Gibson, I was like, oh, nerd shit. And then
you hate William Gibson.
No, I don't. I know. I was, I was kind of like, oh, I don't want to have to like sink into this other world right now. I just like, I was having a sick day. I just want an espionage movie. And then it just was a horny karaoke like hooker espionage movie. And I was like, okay, was like
no, yeah, I know. I think like, that's okay, why I like it more too. But yeah, I guess Abel Ferrara was like, how can you make this an action film? The guy's a cripple, but they wanted to make it an action film. He's like, so Catherine Bigelow walked away. He's like, so I take the book home anyway. I read it and I knew we were fucked because it was great and I knew I had to do it, but they wanted to make a cheap action movie. So I said, guys, when you make a movie totally based on the book, it's going to take us 4 years. At this point, they're in 1 million because they had to keep the rights. I get Walken, I get Zoyce to write it, and then I get Dafoe. Now we're talking. Abel. I know, 2 weeks in a row of just real fucking New Yorkers who just give incredible interviews.
This is a movie where I think there's like a very sincere and earnest use of the word nookie that I want to point out. Christopher Walken refers to fucking as nookie, and I was like,
oh, I don't remember that, but that's
when did nookie come out? I was like, did it start?
It came out the year after this. Well, technically the year it gets a theatrical release, nookie came out. It was a big year for nookie, I guess. Nookie's like a where did that originate?
I don't know. I thought that maybe you knew, so I didn't look it up because I wanted you to teach me.
Where did nookie come from?
Yeah, I have no idea, but
1928. So nookie made a big comeback.
1928?
Generally used by men in 1928, perhaps from Dutch nuken to copulate with. I guess it was a thing in the 20s. Maybe it's time for nookie to make another comeback.
I don't know. I think it's really gross. I really like hate the word. No, I'm pretty happy that I think that song killed it. Like the song made it so embarrassing that it went away.
But it's got to come full circle again. It's got to come back. You want to hear the tightest thing I ever did?
Yes.
I sang nookie in karaoke when I was 11 years old in front of my grandfather.
You did not.
Did,
oh
yeah.
My gosh. Yeah. I don't even know what song you're referring to.
Nookie by Limp Bizkit.
I did it all for the nookie.
Oh, that's okay. That's right. Sorry, erased it from my brain.
Don't do
that. Yeah, I sang that song in entirety in karaoke when I was 11 years old and I had purple hair. So basically, I was the shit. My grandfather was born in like 1920. He's probably like, the fuck? Wow, Nookie's back. Willem Dafoe has a great soul patch in this.
William Dafoe is so hot.
He's the only guy who could have a horrible soul patch and you'd still be like, yeah, but he's still.
Because it's kind of hiding in his.
It took me a few scenes to realize he had a soul patch.
Yeah.
Does he show his dick in anything before Antichrist?
He must. I don't know why I think that.
I'm surprised Abel never made him pull it out.
Maybe
you got a beautiful cock. You got to put this on screen. Yeah, I don't know if he has or not.
I don't know, but I respect him more for being able to go there. That's all.
He should have done it in Spider-Man.
Him and Asia Argento do have like good chemistry together. Like, they do, yeah. I really believe it when he like starts to fall for her or whatever. Like, I'm like, okay.
No, for sure.
I think she's good in this movie. Like, when I really like her when she has like that fur coat on that's like a patchwork coat, but it's multiple colors and it's like furry. And she just keeps calling it her chicken outfit. I was like, oh, I'd fall for you too. Like, you're so weird.
I mean, she's like,
look
like,
at my chicken outfit.
I mean, she's like incredibly hot in this movie.
Yeah. She's like hot in a way that I feel like now, I'm not saying that it doesn't exist. I just think that we like contour people's faces too much. Like, everyone sort of looks like filtered. And I sort of like, she's like hot in this very specific way that I don't think that like is out there right now.
She's very like beautiful in this classic European way, but then also does look like a girl that would be on the cover of like Maxim or NHM or whatever in 2000.
Yeah.
Like she like somehow straddles both those worlds. But she is really good here. I haven't seen, I haven't seen a few. What's the movie she with Catherine Brulotte, The Last Mistress?
I haven't seen that. I haven't seen that many of her movies.
Ooh, I haven't seen that.
And I haven't seen The Heart is Deceitful Above All Things.
Oh, well.
That's the one where she was sleeping with him. Yeah.
Okay. I don't think she was sleeping with him at the time. Like, I think his story is that he was very young when he made the movie. And then, like, over the course of, like, their friendship later on, she was, like, grooming him. And then they slept together later.
I don't know.
I'm not sure. That's so messy too, because like also like the author of that story, it was also fake. It's like it was somebody's pen name and then they would send somebody. Yeah. It's like that whole shit. Whole shit was wild. So it's like it just like was a shit story. I think also think that Cole Sprouse was in that movie.
I think he is, yeah.
Yeah.
He followed up Big Daddy with that. I guess the original source material was that the whole story is flashbacks. Like it's told, it opens with him in the New Rose Hotel and then it's all told through flashbacks, which, you know, was one way to do it. But they asked Abel Ferrara why he chose not to do that. And he says, when I was writing the story, I immediately realized, first of all, I don't like flashbacks. Okay. They're stupid. I was going to be the director of Carlito's Way, which is all flashbacks. The problem with flashbacks is, you know, the guy's alive. You're making a movie. It's an action film. Any action film, the suspense is your guy, the guy you're with, is he going to live or die? Right. Well, if he's telling the story, what does that tell you? He's alive.
That's very spot on.
Yeah, I'm like, look, I'm fine. Like, I love Carlito's Way, and I'm fine with that. Like,
same.
You know, if it works, but like, that's a very funny way to look at it. Is like, it's stupid. Why the fuck would I do that? He must hate Iñárritu movies. The fuck is going on here? So I guess he just tells it pretty linearly, and then has him at the hotel at the end, and then it's just like repeating a lot of scenes that we've already seen.
Yeah, but I like that.
I didn't mind that. Yeah, that's something that a lot of critics pointed out, that they were like, "Oh, really? Fuck is this?" Yeah,
I kind of was into it.
Yeah,
because there is like a twist. You know, if your perspective changes on what happened, then I think that's like
it's an interesting way to like play that out again. Yeah,
yeah,
but yeah, we should say this movie has incredibly low 19%.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Would not expect that.
I know. I thought that it was going to be like so much more like raggedy.
Yeah, as a 19%. But yeah, people were talking about, a lot of critics talked about having to rewatch scenes at the end and being like, why the fuck am I rewatching this scene? Which I think it makes sense.
Me too.
I guess I could understand if somebody was frustrated by it. But yeah, let's see. Michael Atkinson of Mr. Showbiz said, it's virtually unwatchable. Amy Tubman of The Village Voice said, what's on the screen is so dreadful that it inspires the ontological question, what are films and why is this not one of them?
Oh, God.
Wow.
That's one of the most brutal things you could say. Janet Maslin of the New York Times said, affirms that softcore porn is alive and well in cyberpunk.
Who cares?
I know.
That sounds like an endorsement.
Yeah, I know.
I was going to say, I bet like both of these, it's like,
Janet Maslin sucks.
Playing with like porn aesthetic is like, that doesn't make something trashier. And also it's like not even that. Like,
but I think at this time, I think for both of these movies, I think that was very like shocking and jarring for a lot of critics.
Because I'm just like, look at an Ariana Grande music video and it's like softcore porn that I love.
Cole Smithy just said, no. That's his review. No.
Wow.
Yeah.
I hope he wasn't paid per word.
I know.
It's his own blog, so I think that he pays himself. Jonathan Rosenbaum, the Chicago Reader, gave it a slightly positive mixed review. Okay. He said, on the very edge of coherence, but I find its decadent erotic poetry irresistible. A couple years ago, during the beginning of quarantine, The Guardian was doing a piece about film, like underrated films that you should watch or rewatch or things that maybe you don't remember being as great. And this was chosen as one of them. Beatrice Loyaza was writing for The Guardian and said, Ferrara here envisions futuristic industrial espionage the best way he knows how, with a heavy dose of lo-fi sleaze, sex, and delirium. That said, expect a conventional thriller and you'll be disappointed. Call it instead an existential techno-erotica, one that tackles the nature of desire and atomized transactional world. Yeah, I think that's a great way to,
that nails it, I think.
To sum it up, yeah.
Yeah, I think this movie is perfectly fine. I find nothing.
Are you just going to say perfect? This is perfect.
No, no. Like I throw down to Misunderstood Masterpiece for this.
Who's your MVP for New Rose Hotel?
Christopher.
Yeah, I guess it kind of is Christopher. I know he's just doing Walken, but he's so fucking good. I mean,
he's doing Walken. And like, yeah, I want Christopher Walken to like take me apart by basis of my like outfits.
Give you a makeover?
Yeah. I like my teen movie purview into this movie.
Yeah, he just like nails a lot of these lines too. He has a line, he says, they didn't know whether to shit or go blind, which is insane. And then happy as a clam in linguine. I love.
Oh yeah, that's a great one. That's like merch material. Like, oh, yeah. Like I would wear a shirt that said happy like a clam in linguine. Get me a tote.
And one of the scenes where he does use the cane as his cock, he's like kind of like gyrating and sticking the cane between his legs and he goes, oh, my back.
It would probably be Walken.
He's fun. This movie does have a cult following, but I don't know if, I guess it is a cult classic among some circles for sure. I don't think
it's definitely had a resurgence. With people discovering Ferrara, like this is definitely one that's not considered like a misfire on his part, where I think maybe in the past it was.
For sure.
To me, it's like it's a cult classic. Like it's gonna live on.
And I also just think it's a good movie.
It's a good movie.
It's good. It's a little, it like dabbles in Trainwreck, which is fun though.
Trainwreck for me isn't an insult.
Like, no, I know. Yeah. That's what I mean. Like got a little bit of it all. It's dabbling in Trainwreck. It's giving Trainwreck, but. Okay, Demon Lover.
So, discussions can proceed according to schedule.
I say let's do it.
As you can see, business has increased by 35% and our market share has doubled for DemonLover.com and the connected sites.
Manga Sex, Adult Manga, SM Manga, Japan Porno will control 75% of the world market.
Nous avons des concurrents qui sont prêts à n'importe quoi.
You don't like her very much, do you?
I hate her guts.
Cute.
We'll have to figure out a way to control her.
Hellfire Club. It's an interactive torture site.
Extreme.
Very difficult to access. Very successful.
It's like drugs or prostitution. Supply and demand.
Je vous rappelle que pour eux, c'est une question de vie ou de mort.
I don't know. I think they're just like a syndicate of people that are trying to create like manga porn, but it's like incredibly dangerous too.
What if porn was dangerous?
It will, because
very true.
Want to masturbate, but fear for your life.
I liked this movie, but I also think that like in this movie, I think that there's also a fun movie that just sort of like I like the scenes where they're like, it's like a workplace show and they're like at a desk talking about porn. Like, I think that is really fun, but then it gets like really espionage-y and murdery.
It definitely does.
It has a lot going on. My first thing going into this was I had no idea because of the actors involved that it was going to be mostly all French.
Oh, listen. And the DVD that I have, and maybe it's my DVD player, it took me so many times changing to trying to put the subtitles on. Cause it's one of those like, you you know, the DVDs from the era that it's from, that's like very video game like, and it's like taking on the aesthetic of the movie, and you just really have to like click around so much to find what you want. It has to like completely load and completely play like 15 seconds of a song before it will let you make a move. The only way I could get the subtitles on was by watching all of the trailers before the movie for like a bunch of other movies, because otherwise if I turned it on, it wouldn't work. So I had to turn the subtitles on and then go. So for anyone in Portland that's going to rent the Demon Lover copy that I just returned, I'm saving you 40 minutes. I was freaking out. And then like, you know, when you're getting mad about something, but then you're like, wow, I'm so stupid for being actually like, I'm letting this make me so upset.
That's my whole life.
I'm getting like dad mad alone in my apartment trying to watch this mega porn movie.
Come on. Guess I didn't realize, like, it took me, at first I was like, do I have it dubbed in French? Because I was like, Connie Nielsen and Chloe Sevigny are speaking French like well. And I was like, what the fuck is this? And then I kept trying to fix it. And then I was like, oh, it's French.
Yeah.
Obviously, I know the director is. But I was like, oh, fuck. So yeah, that threw me off. But then it's kind of, it's like a corporate espionage thriller crossed with like a techno digital manga erotic thriller.
Yeah.
Olivia, you love this movie. Do it justice. Tell listeners.
Yeah, pretend
what the
that we're
fuck
at a bar
about.
And and one of us was like, "Well, you like movie? What's a movie I should watch?"
What Demon Lover?
God. Okay. Let me see if I could just describe that. It is so plot heavy. Is the thing for something that's so
it's so plot heavy, but it's like so
Yeah. Yeah. You can choose to watch it. It's like which way
you
do you want
to experience? You can. If you don't want to, that's also fine. But the plot, strictly speaking, is about this corporation that is trying to merge or take over. They're acquiring this technology for 3D hentai, interactive hentai, which is manga porn. And there's also this other company that they're interacting with. They're kind of like in a bidding war or whatever. So somehow there is, through the deep dark web connected to this 3D manga thing, there's a interactive torture porn site called Hellfire Club that's accessible.
Isn't that the name of like the new, like in Stranger Things?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe.
I'm pretty sure. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
They were inspired.
So they're like, oh, do you run this as well? And they're like, no, but we admire it, you know? And
it's big fans. But we like it. Listen, we respect the hustle, but we didn't make this.
And so it turns out they do run it. And the woman who is kind of spearheading this takeover ends up getting kidnapped and taken to participate in Hellfire Club, which is
because she's also a spy for a different company.
They're all, I think, she is.
Everybody's a spy.
Everyone's a spy.
Everybody's a spy.
Kind of. There's a lot of double crossing. There's murder. It's all done in a very cold, calculating, clinical way. But then you're also seeing like this heavy BDSM and this like, you know, hentai titties on the screen. So it's like a very interesting mix of stuff going on.
It's very stimulating in a lot of ways.
It is.
It's stimulating the mind. No, there's a lot going on in this. And I kind of chose to just accept that I didn't fully know what was happening at times, and that was okay. Mm-hmm. It didn't affect my viewing in any way. Yeah, no, I think that pretty much sums it up. I do think it's funny that they're like, they can't help but be like, no, we didn't make this, but it's tight, huh? They can't even be like, no, we have no idea what this is. They're just like, this is
right,
like,
the OJ
wish
Simpson.
We made this.
Like, that's some good work.
Props, but I very much remember this movie when it came out. Like, I remember like seeing it at video stores. I remember seeing the cover, but never renting it. I was young and I don't think I maybe was interested. Although I feel like I probably would have liked it if I would have rented it when I was younger. The score is done by Sonic Youth. Another just
so
random element to throw into
it's
the mix.
It's so
is,
good.
It's a great score. Yeah, but just like, Sonic Youth is going to do the score.
Well, they did some songs for Irma Vep, so I think that's why.
Okay. Okay, there you go. It's also got like Goldfrapp at like Death in Vegas. It stars Connie Nielsen, Chloe Sevigny.
Gina Gershon
in a great t-shirt that says, I love gossip. Mm-hmm. Great shirt.
Yeah, it's almost like pre-dark web.
Yeah, we could have done a whole series with movies like this and like Unfriended and Fear.com. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I forgot about Fear.com.
I didn't.
Is it good?
Fear.com. No. Not to evoke my late grandfather again, but my mom and I went to go see Fear.com with my grandfather in Riverside where he lived. And halfway through the movie, my mom leaned over to me and said, "This movie is upsetting your grandfather. We have to leave."
Oh, God. Oh, no.
Really?
It's a very dark movie. Yeah. And it's like not particularly good. This movie feels extremely ahead of its time. And
yeah,
prescient. And it is so funny how, like, we've obviously, anybody who listens to the podcast know how much, and throughout this episode, we have joked about the funny Pornhub ads that we all get now. Mm-hmm. And the,
I just don't get them.
I don't think they get them. I think they're okay.
But I remember them. Like,
no, yeah, but it even, because even there. Yeah, even before that, there was like, you know, like the porn ads are like the things you would see for, like, it looked like gargoyle porn, or it was just like some beast. Oh, God, that was woman. Worse.
Yeah.
And you're just like, what the fuck is this? You're like trying to jag off and you're like, get this fucking ad out of here. What is this? There's like a fucking monster fucking some big titted woman. And it's just like the craziest sound effects. So much pain. You're like, why did you make this? Someone took time to make this.
I mean, this like kind it. Of porn, like hentai, like someone, it seems so labor intensive where it's like,
because
it's a lot of sea. I forgot about how much hentai is like a lot of sea monsters.
Yeah. A lot of tentacles.
Yeah. Fantastical. There is a scene in this movie where they're talking about if the women in the hentai are supposed to be like children and like the, how yes. that the legal implications of that, because they don't have pubic hair, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
It's one of my favorite lines is the guy at the French company says, we have to have pubic hair.
Yeah.
It's like a no negotiation thing.
Right.
What is the, what are the legal ramifications of that? You know,
because I don't know, but yeah, the whole thing is they're like, yo, we don't know how you're doing it over here, but like, if we buy your company and we're selling this shit, like, we have that pubic hair. We can't imply that these are children or underage.
Right.
Women. I know those are some of my favorite scenes that are just like the more board meetings about porn. I'm just like, I would watch a whole movie of these conversations. This is great.
It's like a Frederick Wiseman documentary, just observing these, like, fucking hentai companies. Yeah. We have to have pubic hair.
Because, like, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter where you work. You still have, like, an OOO email that you have to, like, you still have a signature that says your pronoun. Like, I was like,
no, oh, I think it's funny how it portrays that. Like, it's very matter of fact and just, like, yeah, these, like, business dealings of, like, yeah, we want to buy this fucking company. You got 3D chicks with huge tits bowling. This is tight. We want this.
The espionage plot, I'm a little, I don't dislike it. I just don't always know what's happening.
I definitely had to see it a few times to like get.
Okay.
Yeah.
Get flesh it out. It's very, very convoluted. And there's a lot that's like implication that's maybe like shown in a flash or that's not.
Really, it definitely seems like something that, I'm definitely down to revisit it. I want to revisit it. I wanted to watch it twice before we talked about it. I just didn't have time.
It's hard to find.
It is. I ended up buying a copy of it on eBay for, I think, way cheaper than the person realized, because this shit goes for like $100.
I saw the restoration in theaters in February. They're going to release Criterion soon.
I've heard that. Yeah. That would be good. Yeah. And I guess Arrow Video did a Blu-ray release that's out of print now, but it's like a UK only thing. If you torrent it, you can see the higher quality Blu-ray version of it. The only problem is you can't, if you airplay a torrent, subtitles don't transition, which is really annoying.
Oh, that is really annoying.
I have not figured out how to bypass that. I don't know. I guess I was reading something about it that I was like, I don't understand what you're saying, but I get that. Okay, it's not going to work.
You can't do it.
Just, I got it. Wasn't there like some, Olivia, you might know because you are online the way that I am in a way. And wasn't there some like liberal journalist like a few years ago on Twitter who got caught like looking at tentacle porn and everybody was just making fun of him? I feel like it was like during the 2016 election. It was like Kurt something.
How did he get caught?
Oh, I don't know.
Was it like?
I think he like liked a bunch of like or retweeted some like tentacle porn and everybody was like, this motherfucker likes tentacle porn. Everyone was clowning on this guy.
He like accidentally like shared it.
Yeah, it was like the Ted Cruz thing where he liked that like Pornhub thing.
And it appeared on his likes.
Yeah. But this Kurt guy,
I don't remember that.
I can't remember his fucking name.
I was really self-conscious to like what my neighbors that share that wall with me were thinking I was doing for like okay, I was really fucking with the volume of this movie the same way that like I used to in high school when I was like watching Undressed. I was like, oh fuck, like what do they think I'm into? I'm just like, yeah, the Korean girl on the floor that just like goes home and watches anime porn.
She loves manga.
Because it's clearly like I could tell. you know, like, you know, if my eyes were closed or whatever, I could tell that it wasn't porn, that it was like, because it's like,
well, in the uncut version, there, it's not, he doesn't blur it out. In the US version, he had to blur out some of the actual porn. Newsweek's Kurt Eichenwald was just looking at tentacle porn for his family is the headline. Centrist media pundit Kurt Eichenwald hopped on Twitter to inform the world of his interest in tentacle porn. And what was part of a larger attack on bow tie wearing fuckstick Tucker Carlson, Eichenwald sent an image of his computer screen. Eichenwald has loads of enemies on the left and the right who quickly zeroed in on one of his tabs, which was apparently a search for B-Chiku, an extremely hardcore hentai. Do not Google it. He began getting owned for this almost immediately, and to his credit, he did not delete the original tweet. His excuse, however, is not the best. He said, "Sigh, okay, I'm a dumbass. Believe it or not, my kids and I were trying to convince my wife that tentacle porn existed. I tried to..." Okay, I'm a dumbass, but...
I don't know. I kind of think this is awesome.
It says do not Google it, but now I want to. Don't say don't Google it. Now I want to, motherfucker.
Because, okay, but also in his defense, like, what if that is true?
I mean, look, it could be.
Like, I could see
he throws his kids under the bus.
Yeah.
Like, this is my kids. This is from my family. Because the tentacle porn is crazy. That shit is wild. Everyone,
like, yeah, people are weird, but that one I have never understood.
That and, like, you know the ones you see the ads that are like, watch Lois Griffith get fucked by.
Yes,
you know,
I was just
like, it's like
say,
cartoon characters.
Those are so strange.
It's
yeah,
Lois
it's like
Griffith
Marge Simpson
so
getting
weird.
Railed.
It's weirder. It's like weirder
like
than
anti-sexy.
I mean, again, everyone has a thing and. There's someone out there who wants to see Marge Simpson get fucked, but
it's true. Apparently, many, many people.
Yeah, definitely a lot of people.
But it's, yeah, it's something that some people are into.
Yeah, but yeah, Olivia, I'm curious. Like, what you love this movie, and I know a lot of people. I've seen it a lot pop up on Letterboxd over the years. People really ride for it and really love it. So I was always really interested and excited to watch it. But what brought you to Demon Lover and why is it your favorite of his?
Well, I think it's one of those movies that's just so wildly predictive and only becomes more and more like prescient as like time goes on. Like, I think this was pre-Patriot Act. It was 2002, right?
Yeah, it was like right around that time, yeah.
Right around that time. But yeah, right around that time as well, there's like a couple things that it predicted, but there was this site called, this like infamous site called Insex. Like,
oh, okay.
I-N-S-E-X, but
like bugs.
It,
oh, okay.
Insects, like yeah. Sex is in.
There you go. There yeah. you go. Yes.
Insects.
But it was an interactive sadomasochistic site that would like stream live things. And it got sued under the Patriot Act and completely had to shut down. It went bankrupt and all this. So that was, I think, 3 years after this came out. And then also the rise in hentai just in general, sure. Like as it and this American company kind of coming in and seeing its value, predicting that it would be a huge thing, which it was and is. And also I just think it's a great film. It looks beautiful. I love the soundtrack.
Yeah, the aesthetic of it is incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. It's dreamlike. It's kind of like once you're submerged in it, it's kind of like nightmarish, inescapable. It's super cold, which I feel like in a movie about sex and porn and all of that, that's kind of like a rare tone to take. And I think mm-hmm. it totally works because of the business side of it, the espionage, the calculation.
Right.
I mean, I get why this was so badly received. It's a strange movie, and especially at the time, but I think, like I said, it's something that's only grown more relevant. And I think like its reevaluation is super important because it was so, so predictive and
yeah,
just bizarrely on point.
Well, it feels like it fits into a lot of, I think, some other 2000s movies that we've talked about on the podcast that were, you know, maligned at the time, but were somehow so ahead of their time, you know, like Gamer or Southland Tales. Mm-hmm. You know, these looks at like
yeah.
our digital interactions in the worlds that we live in. And I think
maybe the desensitization
yeah.
that goes and into that. Yeah.
Because I wonder, I was like, I don't know if anyone's made a really great modern movie in this era about social media that doesn't feel like really on the nose or really preachy in a way. Like I honestly right. think the Unfriended movies might come the closest.
I was gonna say sadly
being like an accurate version of like, oh yeah, this is the world that we live in.
I mean, I think parts of Ingrid Goes West get some things right?
I think parts of it do. I wish it like stuck the, I wish it kind of.
Me too. It doesn't stick
to its guns a little better, but yeah. It feels like a time where maybe like, because a lot of critics, especially American critics, didn't understand it. Because I think it was fairly well received at the Cannes Film Festival when it debuted. Mm. It seems like it was mostly American critics that wrote it off, like fully understand it. Also, yeah, like this movie does come at the first Cannes Film Festival after 9/11. And so because I think of how violent and disturbing a lot of it is, and it's very cold and it's very detached and it's very anti-human in a lot of ways, that I imagine that, yeah, like to, you know, read the temperature in the room, it was a lot of people who were just like, I can't watch this right now, or why do we need this right now? Which I think is always a kind of...
Do you think some of it too is that like what we were saying up at the top of the show, like the director is someone who like jumps around so much that I think that this is not what I expected from him, because like I think the movies that I've seen are like Clean, Irma Vet, Summer Hours. And so something like this sort of like horny and weird, it was like really and violent, it was like pretty startling.
It seems like it, yeah. I mean, the movie he made before, this 3-hour movie called Sentimental Desires that takes place in the late 19th century about a Protestant minister. And before that, he made like a very kind of like small movie about marriage, I think called Late August, Early September, that I've never seen.
Oh, I've seen that.
Okay. So
like,
yeah,
it's like sometimes I feel like he makes like domestic movies, and like even Irma Vep is almost like an anti-vampire movie, you know?
Right,
like,
right.
It's not like satisfying in the way that like people who want to watch something like Twilight or even like True Blood. It has some great costumes.
Yeah.
But,
well, it seems like Demon Lover, Clean, and Boarding Gate are his like next three films, and they feel a little more interconnected. Then returns to like Summer Hours, and then does this sprawling series on Carlos, this amazing character and era. And then kind of goes back to, I think, the things that we most associate with him, with like Clouds of Sils Maria and Personal Shopper, which I guess is his take on A Ghost Story.
I think that a lot of times critics or just audiences in general, they have a hard time with sex when it's shocking, but not also titillating, which I think
this
and not movie condemning qualifies. It. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just an examination. So it's not turning you on. It's not, I mean, it's kind of like maybe making you disgusted or uncomfortable in a way that's not sexy at all when talking about sex. And I think that a lot of times it's hard for people to receive that or take that in.
Yeah, like its prescience and how it, I think both films, but mostly this one, deal with obviously like transactional relationships and how everybody is always kind of fucking somebody else over and the paranoia that it elicits in a digital world,
and that there's like always somebody there to take your place, like you are like the replaceable object in
exactly
that
right
yeah. The only thing that's like actually like permanent is like the desire or the demand, but like you yourself are just interchangeable. Another great part of the movie I do think is the conversation around Stars Naked.
Yes. Yeah, they're like, we have to just get lookalikes now because we've been sued.
Stars Naked is, I was just like, this is a fucking, this is great writing right here.
The Tomb Raider.
Oh, the Tomb Raider.
They're like, what can we say? People want to see Lara Croft get tortured. I don't know. I know. I, it's so funny. Yeah, because it is a matter of fact, it's a bunch of people that are sitting in, you know, in suits and boardrooms that are basically like, I don't know, this is what people want, so we're going to make it. Eventually, yeah, it becomes so overwhelming to like the age that we're in now, where it just becomes about like, okay, now we just need to like sell their personal information, and now we just need to sell their data, and now we just need to know we can trace what they like and find it through that. But it's interesting with porn now, because I am not like Kurt Ironwolk or whatever. I'm not into tentacle porn, but it does still pop up on my ads on porn sites. So it's like, I'm like, what are they targeting right now? Because
I think that, okay, here's my hypothesis, because I get it too. Is it like, I think what it is,
you want to be into this.
Yeah. I think that they're testing people to be like, you know what? Like maybe I'll dabble, you know,
if you want to switch it up. Yeah.
I don't think Pornhub listens to me like the same way that like, if I tell my phone right now that like, I want a new laundry hamper, like Instagram will serve me a laundry hamper by EOD. I promise. Like, I don't think that porn does that unless you're like actually actively clicking. It's not like searching thing for you. I really hope not. But yeah, so I think they're just being like, I don't know, like, are you interested in someone dressed up like a teddy bear? Like,
yeah, I guess that is it. They're like, how can we test like the limits of your desire, because you are so desensitized that like you're gonna want to keep upping the stakes.
Yeah, I think that's the only thing that I can imagine that it is. And then probably from there, they do run analytics where it's like one in every 700 people is at least sea creature curious or whatever.
Want to take it to the next level tonight? Which is true. Like, you look at so much porn that you're like,
eventually you are
like, fuck yeah, give me something fucking different right now.
Sometimes it's just like, maybe I do need the weird palate cleanser.
Yeah, sometimes you want a classic.
XR. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, give me some nice lighting. Make sure that cum shot is lit just right. And it's like, and I think where does that build to from here now?
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Well, now with deep fakes and stuff, at least I'm not standing hentai porn, but at least hentai porn, like somebody has to be like physically drawing it. But now we've like reached the point in technology where like there actually doesn't even need to be anyone behind it, so much to the point that like you almost don't even need to desire it. You just need to be curious about like wanting to look at it.
Something that Demon Lover demonstrates so well is that escalation that you get from desensitization. Like you need to feel something, you go more extreme. Like this hentai company, it's, you know, porn being made, it's not interactive, you know, it's 3D, it has a set storyline, whatever. The difference with Hellfire Club is like people are telling, they're interacting with, they're saying what they want to happen. There's more of an interactive goings on there.
They get to be agents.
So it's really demonstrating that the stakes just need to be higher and higher, like especially when it comes to like modern sexuality or the merging of sexuality and technology, especially. Like it ends like with that kid like doing his homework.
The ending's really dark.
On the site and like telling what they want to do to her, and then he's like doing his science homework at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, that's kind of the future. It's scary, and I think it shows that the split, that turn of the century movement towards this is the old way, this is the new way.
A lot of people compared it. It feels like an easy comparison, but I get it, to Cronenberg.
Oh,
yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, how it's very kind of cold, a detached portrayal of corporate capitalist concerns and business. I mean, it's not even horribly reviewed as a 53%.
Oh,
not too bad.
Not too bad.
You know, for this show, that's upper echelon of
40% audience score, though.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'll ask my neighbors what they thought of it.
Stephen Hunter, shooter himself, is back from the Washington Post. He said, meant to be a sleek, dark, disturbing David Cronenberg style thriller, Olivier Assayas' film is just an annoying concoction. Roger Ebert said, by the end of the movie, I frankly didn't give a damn. There's an ironic twist, but the movie hadn't paid for it and didn't deserve it. And I was struck by the complete lack of morality in Demon Lover.
See, that's what it's being read as, like an endorsement of what it's portraying. And it's just not. It's just an examination.
Yeah, which feels, it is very much a movie that I think is also great for this podcast, but also is so indicative of, like, especially reviewing this movie in like a festival circuit where you're watching so many different movies, you have to like cram on a review, get it out in a certain amount of time. It's just like, you can't digest the movie. You can't really sit with it, and to have a knee-jerk reaction to a movie like this. Yeah. Like, you're going to get a lot of bad reviews. I don't know how I would have received it in that time if I was a critic, but so many movies I think that we talk about on this podcast and favorite movies and minor movies that I might not have initially loved or didn't take the time to let them sit with me. Kim Morgan of The Oregonian said, manages to feel both obvious and oblique. You feel the need to watch it twice, but wonder if you would actually be up for it. Moves like a breezy techno thriller, but tangles itself with duplicities and metaphors. You get it, and then you don't get it, and then you wonder if you even care. Mark Sublove of the Austin Chronicle said, this film will either drive you mad or make you angry, possibly both, if you're lucky, but it's rarely boring.
Well, that's true.
Some more positive reviews, though. People did like it at the time. Charles Taylor of Salon said, it's a consistently exciting piece of movie making, but it's not a pleasant experience. It's one of the few recent movies that have the power to leave you genuinely shaken up.
Yeah.
Stephen Ray of the Philadelphia Inquirer said, has a dreamy ominousness about it and a sorrowfulness that speaks to the artificial intimacies of cellular communication, digital images, and dial-up porn. Good old dial-up porn. And finally, Manila Dargis, writing for the LA Times, said, it's an exasperating, irresistible, must-see mess of a movie about life in the modern world, and so very good that even when its story finally crashes and burns, the filmmaking remains unscathed.
Oh.
See, I don't think it's a mess. I think it's so precise and calculated.
Yeah, I think it feels so like a mess because there's so much coming at you. But
yeah, that's true. There's it's very multifaceted. It's a lot going on, but it's the opposite of a mess. I think it's orchestrated like so precisely. So it's interesting that a lot of people at the time read it as a mess. I mean, yeah. I get it, but it's just like...
It's intentionally disjointed, but I don't think of it as like messy.
Yeah, no, I agree. Again, I think that's like a first viewing read of a movie that throws so much at you. Who's everyone's MVP for Demon Lover?
I'm going to go Gina Gershon because I just love her so much. Like she just makes any movie better.
Stars I think Naked. I'm going with Gina too.
Cool.
Love Gina. Nice. Love Gina. Yeah. I said, finally, someone speaking English in this movie. I can finally understand somebody.
Stars Naked.
And she, I know that. great costumes. I love how much so much of the wardrobe in some of these scenes, I was like, this could easily be shit that people are wearing right now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, what's the 20th anniversary of this movie? And yeah, people are dressing like this again. And I love gossip. I love gossip. I do love gossip. I love Stars Naked.
I myself some platform Mary Janes yesterday. Nice. Yeah, I sent a picture of them to Maya and I was like, should I buy these or loafers? And she was like, well, the Mary Janes might make you feel like, she was like, get the loafers, the Mary Janes will make you feel like a little girl. And I sent her a text back saying, I think I want to feel like a little girl. I bought the Mary Jane.
Final rating?
Pretty good.
I think it's a misunderstood masterpiece. I think it's so perfect.
That's hot.
I feel like I would give it to that if I had time to watch it again, because I really loved it.
It's and a lot.
I've thought about it a lot since I
think on like the third watch is kind of where you're like, oh, okay, so that plot line like goes into this one and that links here. And it's like, it took a while.
I'm undecided right now, honestly, but I do think that it's a great movie and possibly a misunderstood masterpiece when I revisit it. I'm excited to revisit it. Both of these films they're not the best quality versions of them out there. Demon Lover is one that you can find on DVD. If you have a UK player or a region free player, you can watch the UK Blu-ray copy of it. You can torrent it. Just know that if you airplay it, the subtitles will not come on your screen.
And there's also different versions because of the different, he had to cut. So there's different versions out there. So be mindful of that.
There's the more tentacle cut of it.
Right.
The can cut is out there. It's 10 minutes longer. But yeah, you can also, you can torrent it. And hopefully it'll get some sort of a proper release soon. New Rose Hotel is on Tubi, which makes sense. It's with ads, but I know,
ads are so funny. They're just like so jolty.
You know, if you can torrent New Rose Hotel, I would torrent it because I found a really good copy of it that was much better than the DVD I own and much better than the Tubi version of it. Love to own movies and then torrent them.
Yeah.
And if I get in trouble, I'm like, look, I fucking own it. What do you want me to do? Come on, it's not illegal. So yeah, you can watch them there. Next week, we're going to be talking about some action vibes next week. Talking about some real dreamy action vibes with Universal Soldier, Day of Reckoning.
Never seen this one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so good. Starring Scott Adkins and Jean-Claude Van Damme and Dolph Lundgren, directed by John Himes. And then we'll be talking about Nicholas Winding Refn for the first time with Only God Forgives.
He has to have more rotten movies though, right?
The Neon Demon is straddling. It's a 59.
Okay.
It's a 59%. Oh, and Fear X with John Turturro, which actually is kind of good.
I've never seen it.
It's like in between the Pusher series and his like kind of new rebirth era.
Okay.
That'll be fun. That'll be a nice talk. Olivia, thank you so much for coming on last minute to talk about
these. Thank you. Yes, always. Love it. Love it here.
Let people know again where they can find you if you want them to.
Sure. Yeah. At Little Bird Live on Instagram. And I'll plug this. I recently started writing for a Philly-based website and zine called Movie John. So.
Oh, cool. Fuck yeah. I didn't know that.
For them, yeah.
Oh, yeah. What is it called?
Great. So Movie John, like JAWN, like the regional.
Got it. Not insects.com.
No.
I'm writing for insects. Oh, wait, no. I did see that you posted this. That's exciting. That's awesome. You're writing for Philly. Yeah. Please follow Olivia. Please read her writing. If you are listening to this, you're listening on patreon.com.
You spent at least $3. So thank you and tell your friends. $3 is so cheap. Bro.
Yeah, it is a cup of coffee.
Good deal.
It's less
than a cup of coffee
in most places now. With inflation, you can't get better than
$3. It's like a bag of high chews.
Yeah. We thank you so much for your loyalty and for subscribing and for being a part of this. Tell your friends. We have new tiers starting at $3 a month. You can get bonus episodes for $7 a month. You can get a full package for $15 a month where you can live in a town with us where everybody wants to fuck. That's the $15 prize. You're welcome. please make sure to follow us on Instagram and Twitter and those things. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.
That's fucking filmmaking right there.